Hello there. Quick prelude and quick PSA about the status of the podcast. The Mortis arc / Starkiller arc is still well underway. I am still in the process of recording that. I am being particularly careful about this particular theory, hence why the episodes are coming out slowly. It is a theory I've had for quite a while, long before making this podcast was even a thing, and I want to do it right. And I want to make sure that my thoughts, my theories come out in a way that is coherent, succinct, and understandable fashion. So for that reason, it is going to take some time to complete it. This episode is not going to be a tale, legend, or theory per se, but just a conversation somewhat similar to the second episode of this podcast. And it is definitely something that's going to happen in future podcasts, because future podcast episodes, because on top of positing tales, legends, talking about tales and legends and positing theories, we want to just have a discussion, just lay back and not really think per se, and just, you know, just talk about Star Wars. And that is exactly what this episode is. No outside knowledge necessary, nor any outside research or any previous knowledge of previous episodes necessary to enjoy this episode. So thank you for tuning in and enjoy the episode. Hello there. Happy Tuesday, October 27th. This is Mandalore the Esquire. If you can tell based on the background white noise, I am currently on the road. The last time I did a podcast episode on the road was the second episode, in which we had a discussion about how Revan should be treated in the new Disney canon if or when they are portrayed in live action, whether that be by way of a TV show or a movie. Hopefully, if they go the movie route, it will be a series of movies. That episode, I believe, was particularly successful. That was not scripted. There was no notes taken. It was just me talking, just talking about what was on my mind and just my thoughts. And I wanted to do the same thing here. I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast not long ago. The latest episode, or at least I believe it was the latest one, it may have been the second to latest one as of today, Tuesday, October 27th, where Joe Rogan interviews Kanye West. I have not heard many of Kanye's songs other than the ones you would typically hear on the radio, you know, like Power, All the Lights, you know, that sort of stuff. From those songs, I like them, but I know in a recent song that he put out, he mentions Anakin and Obi-Wan and having the high ground, and my girlfriend, my fiance to be, she showed that to me, and I just kind of fanboyed, you know, like, oh, that's pretty cool, you know. From what I could tell from the Joe Rogan podcast, Kanye is a big Star Wars fan. He's a massive Star Wars fan. He's a fan of many things. He's very good at referencing fandoms. He's very good at referencing fandoms, and you can tell he knows his stuff. Like, if you were to talk about the high ground, or I guess midichlorians, or a Holdo, the Holdo maneuver, he would know what you're talking about, and he would have an opinion, probably go on a 10-hour rant about one thing. And all that aside, he said something in the latest episode of the Joe Rogan podcast which got me thinking. He said that there are many people who, that there's a class of people, there's a group of people who find that the latest Disney sequel trilogy is better than the previous two trilogies, the movies where George Lucas had an extensive hand in making. Obviously, the prequels, episodes 1, 2, and 3, were made and extensively overseen by George Lucas himself. And episodes 1, 4, 5, and 6, 4, George created and directed. 5 and 6, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he did not direct those. He had a very heavy hand in making those. I think he produced those. I don't know the exact legalese, but I know for a fact that he had a very, like, he had almost direct control in making the first four movies, but in 5 and 6, he got a director to direct those. Case in point, episode 6, Return of the Jedi, he tapped David Lynch to direct that movie. and he brought David Lynch to Skywalker Ranch and to show his storybook and like the sketches. And David's like, what the hell am I looking at? No. funny enough, David Lynch went on to direct Dune 2 years later, a year later, 2 years later, within the ballpark of that time. Clearly, David Lynch was thinking about that. Regardless, Kanye put a distinction between the first six movies and the final three, and he basically condescended the people who liked the sequel trilogy movies, which I will not get into the merits of. I love the Star Wars saga. I love all the movies. But I love Star Wars for what it is. It's beautiful. But anyway, at one point, he not only does he, you know, uplift the George Lucas films, the first six movies, but he uplifts in particular the first three films, not the chronological ones, but in terms of when they were created, but episodes 1, 2, and 3, the prequels. He said that the prequels are better than the other Star Wars movies, all the other ones, including 4, 5, and 6, the original trilogy. And I thought, wow, that is a hot take. That is contentious. And it's not without merit, don't get me wrong. I do not disagree. In fact, there are many things about that position that I absolutely agree. It is dangerous to say that... I would think, even though the prequels have aged particularly well, especially thanks to our prequel memes, and just, you know, the overall aging and settling of those movies, it's still, in my opinion, I think it is maybe too early. It's still too contentious to say those are far and away better than all the other movies, just across the board in terms of all their aspects. I will say that there are particular aspects about the prequel trilogy that absolutely far and away outdo what came in the original trilogy, and outdid anything that we see in the sequel trilogy. There are several aspects, but the one that immediately jumps out is the score, the songs. Oh my God, John Williams and George Lucas were made for each other. They are like, if you're a Twin Peaks or a David Lynch fan, John Williams is to Angelo Badalamenti what George Lucas is to David Lynch. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I would just look up, you know, Angelo Badalamenti explaining the creation of Twin Peaks with David Lynch. Just type that in, and basically you have an interview with Angelo Badalamenti, who in front of his keyboard in his home, he's doing an interview. And the question is, you know, how did you come up with Laura's theme? You know, the theme for the TV series Twin Peaks. And he says, David Lynch comes here. He comes into my home. Angelo Badalamenti is in front of his keyboard, and immediately David Lynch just tells him the story of what he believes is going to be the main character, what's her plight going to be, what's her story going to be, and the direction of the show. And without even mentioning notes, without even mentioning, you know, without even talking about keyboards or notes or instruments, Angelo, he just closes his eyes and he begins tapping the keyboard. And based on the story that David is telling him, he forms the music around the scene based on what David Lynch is telling him right then and there. John Williams, I cannot speak to his method of making the score for any movie, or including that of Star Wars, but there's just something so different about the music in the prequel trilogy as opposed to everything else in the other movies. It just seems like the music is just, it is a reflection, it is a personification, it is a amplifier, it is so much in the prequel trilogy, much more so than what it is in the original and sequel trilogy. In the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, you have songs that stand out and are obviously very representative and and evoke emotion in the scene that's going on. Case in point, the Battle of Yavin. Oh my God, that song gives me thrills and chills when Luke Skywalker is going down the Death Star trench and he shoots his ion, the proton torpedoes, even though he took off his targeting computer and the closest thing to like a father figure besides Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben. Wait, is it? Oh no. You know, Uncle Ben. Yeah, no, Uncle Ben. That's Obi-Wan. I got confused with my Spider-Man fandom right there. He just passed away, and yet he's hearing his voice from the afterlife. He turns off the targeting computer, he shoots the proton torpedoes, and boom. That song is amazing. And you have, I would put Ray's theme, and I would put the sequel trilogy. I'm actually drawing a blank. I'm trying to think of songs that clearly stand out. Oh my God, the throne room scene in The Last Jedi. I believe it's called A New Alliance, or Alliance Has Been Forged, something like that. That is amazing. But whereas you get those specks, those like glimpses of like beautiful moments where the music and the scene resonate, they harmonize, they amplify each other, and they put the person in the position. I feel that way throughout the prequels. It is just, you can tell, like, there's so much love and affection and oversight and creativity in the prequels. Now, what I would like to do is hone in on a particular score that I believe is the best in the prequel trilogy, and I would happily make the case it is the best in the entire saga. That's probably a little too dangerous, but you know, I'll just put it out there. You know, it is a contender, but it is, I think, the best in the prequel trilogy. I may lose a few listeners after this, but let's pick three from a hat. One of these songs is the one I'm talking about. In episode one, I think the best song, the best score in that episode is Duel of the Fates. And that song is very important given what is happening before you, the fight between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. And Dave Filoni in a recent interview said that the meaning of the title Duel of the Fates means that it's not, you know, Maul and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are not fates per se, but they are, you know, the fate of someone or something. Perhaps the fate of Anakin Skywalker, who is pretty much the main antagonist of the entire series, and the fate of the Star Wars galaxy, those are at risk. Those are on the table based on the fight that's happening before us. Qui-Gon is the closest thing to a father figure Anakin Skywalker has ever had. He was born as part of a, I'm trying to think of the term. Basically, he was born without a father. The Force, actually, that's pretty, Disney has not talked about that yet. Legends kind of talked about it. But under the current canon, pretty much the Force is probably the closest thing we have to explain why Anakin was born to Shmi, but to no father. Qui-Gon was going to be his father figure. He was going to be the closest thing to a father figure. He was going to for sure be his master if he survived against the fight against Maul, but clearly that's not what happened. According to, based on what we see before the fight, the fate of Star Wars and Anakin is sealed when Maul kills Qui-Gon. Had it been the other way, that Qui-Gon and or Obi-Wan kill Maul, then Anakin would get to have a father figure, and conceivably, the events in subsequent films would not happen the way they happened. So it's very important in terms of what we see, what's happening on screen, in terms of context, in terms of what the title says and what we see happening before the screen. Let's skip the second episode for now. Let's go to episode 3. In episode 3, we have Battle of the Heroes, which is meant to be a parody. It is meant to be evocative, or it's supposed to remind you of Duel of the Fates. That is pretty clear based on what we see again on screen and based on the similarities. I am not musically literate myself. If I knew the proper terminology, vocabulary, I would use it right now. So just if you are musically literate, please substitute my faulty, lacking verbs for the correct verbiage. But basically, there's a rhyme, there's a poetry there. the notes, the rhythm, the speed of the song, the tension, the hype, the drops, they match very much what happened in Duel of the Fates. And very much like Duel of the Fates, what's happening in this fight is going to seal the fate of Star Wars, the Star Wars galaxy, and Anakin Skywalker forever. Based on whoever walks out of this fight, that's going to set the stage for things to come. And we know how that ends. Anakin loses, he becomes Darth Vader, and Obi-Wan goes to Polis Massa and helps Padme give birth to Anakin's son. So it is very important. It is very beautiful. It is strong. It is evocative. It is amazing in many things. That song, Battle of the Heroes and Duel of the Fates are similar in that they're fight songs. But what I think is the best song, the best score in Episode 2, and the best in the prequel trilogy, and I would posit perhaps the best in the entire saga, is not a fight song. It does not occur during a fight. It happens... there's a riff somewhere towards the end of the movie, but the song proper that I'm thinking about occurs at the very, very end of the movie. You know what I'm talking about. It's cats out of the bag. It's Across the Stars, parentheses, the love song. That song, that score, I gotta stop saying song. It's not a song. Songs have lyrics. This doesn't have lyrics. Even though you could make the argument Duel of the Fates did have lyrics, because it was like Sanskrit, but it was like jumbled up. If you didn't know that. Across the Stars serves so many functions for me that I am actually scared I'm not going to be able to cover them all right now. But I'm on the road, I'm in the open road, and my thoughts are joggling. So let's see how many I can get down. But let me tell you why I think this is the absolute best score in the entirety of the prequel trilogy and the saga. What is happening before us? What is happening before us is not a fight. No one's life is per se in danger or about to be lost. What we see is Anakin. We're not going to talk about the riff. We'll probably talk about the riff later, where we hear the notes of this song. But at the end of the movie, we see Anakin Skywalker marrying secretly his lover Padme Amidala on Naboo. This is after Padme finally confessed her love to Anakin, even though Anakin was kind of being a creeper throughout the entire first three-fourths of the movie. Love comes in many shapes, sizes, and forms, whatever. So let's not judge there. The fact of the matter is she loves him, and she's demonstrated as such. They are having their secret wedding on Naboo, and Anakin had his arm cut off. He is kind of given into anger when he fought Dooku. He lost to Dooku. He is angry. He is upset. This is going to kind of form his anger and frustrations towards Dooku, as we see it in the Clone Wars TV show and Episode 3. And the Empire, well, the proto-Empire, the clones, have entered the scene. They are now the strength of the Republic. And what's his name? Palpatine is quickly consolidating power. He's becoming... He's like two steps away from becoming the Emperor. Anakin is marrying against the Jedi code, against the Jedi tenets. He is marrying Padme. He has a connection with her. It is pretty much a forbidden connection. He not only has compassion towards her, but loves her to a fault, to the point that he'll get angry for her. He will kill for her. He just killed, a bunch of sand people. He just witnessed his mother dying. He lost, like, the woman of his life who died right before him. And immediately, another important woman, someone that he loves with all of his life, has entered the scene. One important woman, the most important woman in Anakin's life just died days before. And yet another one has now entered the scene and has committed herself to him and has become part of his family. On top of that, we have the we see Anakin take the hand of Padme. The hand he uses to take Padme's hand is the robotic one, the one that he gained after he lost his hand to Dooku. What this tells me is, you know, well, let's back up. In episode 4, 5, and 6, we learned that Darth Vader is essentially more machine than man. And we actually learned that in episode 3, but he is more machine than man. He is hollow, okay? And what that tells me from episode 2, when we see Anakin's robotic hand grab Padme's, is that the hollowing process, if you will, has already begun. It began when he, obviously his arm was cut, his hand was cut off during the fight with Dooku, but really it's kind of a representation of what's happening around there. He became more hollow when the first woman of his life died in his own arms. He became hollow when he went on a genocidal rampage and killed the sand people, the men, the women, and the children. He became hollow when he had to bury his own mother in front of his, I guess, stepfather that he had no intention of really, you know, coming to know or loving. He became hollow when, you know, he tried to fight Dooku and lost. He became hollow, I would now posit, when he committed himself to Padme against, you know, the tenets of the Jedi Order. The hollowing has begun. There's a darkness that is beginning in Anakin. Or if it's not dark, it's not beginning, it's manifesting. And marrying Padme is only going to exacerbate that. That's what that tells me. And finally, what we see is what I mentioned earlier. The Republic Army has now been formed. It has been annexed into the Republic formally. Palpatine, Bail Organa, the blue alien advisor to Palpatine, which we see actually in the latest Darth Vader comic, is still with Palpatine all the way up to leading up to the events of Return of the Jedi, and a bunch of other senators. They're in a balcony in Coruscant overlooking the deployment of the first phase of clone troopers. And we see the basically, it's the proto empire. It's if you've seen the first, you know, if you've seen episodes 4, 5, and 6, you know there's an empire. They span the galaxy. How did that happen? It just happened overnight. No, you had the clones, and then you get part of the Vader's theme, the Empire song, which is basically telling you, hey, wink and a nod, this is the Emperor. This is the first wave of stormtroopers, if you will, and this is the beginning of the end. And then if that's not clear enough for you, you see Bail, you know, kind of, you know, knocking with his fingers the brick that make up the balcony. He's looking down, he's like, oh shit, what did we get ourselves into? And yet then again, we kind of need this because the Separatists do pose a threat to the Republic. Little did he know that basically the Star Wars equivalent of Satan is like 1 inch away in front of him. So all of that, you have a lot of darkness right there. All darkness just hiding right there in the scene and immediately before. And yet, you have something beautiful that is happening before you. Something magical. You have a Star Wars wedding. A wedding between a Jedi and a non-Jedi. Someone who loved someone else. This is Anakin loving Padme. Loving Padme ever since he was a child. He is marrying the equivalent of a freaking angel, according to his words. Sweetheart, if you're hearing this, I'm not calling Padme or Natalie Portman an angel. I'm using Anakin's words. He is marrying his childhood, you know, love interest, you know, the love of his life. And Padme, apparently, notwithstanding Anakin's kind of cringy dating, you know, attempts to court Padme, she is madly in love with him, so much so that she is willing to, you know, put herself in danger and put her reputation in danger, her position in danger. It's selflessness in a way. It kind of selfishness on part of Anakin, but it's also, you know, selflessness. Like, you know, like, no matter what may happen, no matter what the Jedi think, no matter what the fellow senators think, whatever, obviously we're not going to tell them. We're going to put that aside. But if something happens, you know, we're going to go through it together. You know, we're going through this together, because in the end, we love each other. It is beautiful. And on top of that, you have the, I guess the Star Wars equivalent of a priest, you know, kind of, you know, marrying them. And then you have C-3PO and R2-D2 just right there. They're kind of like, in a way, stand-ins for the audience. And if before, at least the sequel trilogy, I would posit that they are also kind of the, they're kind of the protagonist of this beautiful saga. They are the focal point. They've been there for everything. They have bared witness to the entirety of the Skywalker lineage. They've been there and they've viewed the galaxy shape around them because of the foolishness of the Jedi, the deceitfulness of the Sith, and the actions of the Skywalkers. They've been there, and here they are. They're witnessing the wedding of Anakin, the secret wedding of Anakin Skywalker to Padme. It's just, oh my God, there's so much shit happening on screen. And John Williams is here, you know, with his piano on fire, just like just, oh my God. And what's cool is that this isn't a fight scene. It's not a fight scene. No one's life is in danger per se. But look at all the darkness. Look at all the foreshadowing. It's like, in my mind, I gotta stop saying like. I'm trying to get rid of those little ticks. It reminds me of the Fates as we saw them in the final season of the Clone Wars, where Yoda is going through, is trying to complete the process that Qui-Gon started to become a Force ghost. They oversee everything. They know the future of the Star Wars galaxy. They are closest thing to omnipotent. Whenever I watch the scene, in my mind, I imagine the Fates kind of telling each other, behold brothers, behold sisters, behold, I'm pretty sure they're genderless or whatever. Let's not get into that. I'm pretty sure they're telling each other, behold brothers and sisters, this is the happiest moment in, you know, the story of Skywalker. Behold, this is where darkness begins. Like, this is paradoxically the happiest moment in pretty much any Skywalker's life. But it is also the impetus. It is the beginning of darkness. It is where everything that comes before episode 3, 4, 5, 6, and by necessity, I guess, the sequel trilogy, all of this happens because of what you see on screen. The Empire is rising. Palpatine is consolidating power. Anakin is having a secret marriage. He's going against the tenets of the Jedi Order just to... Oh my God. Fucking idiot. Sorry, this guy almost... Anyway. Sorry, I am on the road again. Anakin is having a secret marriage to Padme and is going against the tenets of the Jedi Order against, you know, Obi-Wan's... wishes. There's a darkness that is beginning to manifest in him. It not only manifested when he killed the sand people, but he is literally becoming less human before our eyes. He's becoming more machine, and yet look at it, you know, it's behold, there is just so much to unpack in this one scene. And you don't even have to be a freaking film critic. You don't even have to be a Star Wars fan to unpack it. It does help, admittedly, to know the implications of, like, what you're seeing before you. But it's just, oh my God, there's so much happening. And it's not even a fight scene. So many fates have been sealed during that one scene. And John Williams just takes it away with Across the Stars. Now, I've spoken to my girlfriend, a fiancée-to-be, and I told her, I've dissected this scene in front of her before. Not to this extent, obviously. She may view this, and she may talk about, she may listen to this, and I'll happily to remind her of what I just said, but I've unpacked the scene before her, and she, as a avid Padme fan, she agrees that there's a lot happening in this scene, and it is, despite all the negative foreshadowing, there's a lot of beauty in there. It is absolutely beautiful. And Across the Stars, it takes place during a wedding. okay? It is essentially a wedding song. Well, not essentially, but it could serve as that. And I've jokingly told her, hey, when we get married, you know, I'm going to do all these things for you. I'm going to go out of the way. You know, we're going to have the wedding the way we always dreamed of it, and obviously the way you want it, right? But if I can make one small request, one teensy tiny request, and if you can't do it, that's absolutely fine. But if I can make one request, can you just get a riff of, can you just get the organ player to do a little riff of Across the Stars? And she jokingly laughed, and she said no, but then, you know, over time she, you know, it seems like that was a joke, and she's like, you know, if I can do it, I will. That's how much I love this song, ladies and gentlemen. That song is thematically, tonally, I don't know, again, I'm not musically verbose. It is the sound of it, what is happening on screen, the implications it carries, just how it meshes with what is happening. It marries what you see on the screen to what you hear. It's just beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful, and it captures a scene like, as I dare say, like no other. Like no other. Duel of the Fates, Battle of the Heroes, carries a lot of implications. It's a fight. It's a fight scene. Someone's gonna get hurt. Someone's gonna die. Someone is gonna walk out of there, and fates are gonna change. But in a way, it also serves as like a fight song. You know, it's like I'm gonna get a lot of shit for this, but it's like watching the end of Karate Kid. You know, you're the best around. No one's gonna ever get you down. You know, there's a song going on in the fight, and the fight's still badass without the song. But let's be frank, the song is better with the song. Am I right? Rocky IV, is it Survivor or Vince DiCoppola, something like that? With the USA versus like Russian song. You don't need it, but it's there and it makes the fight better. It's a fight song. Duel of the Fates, Battle of the Heroes, they're quasi fight songs. There's a lot of importance to them. It really marries the scene, but it kind of like, it emphasizes, you know, to me, it kind of serves as a fight song, as fight songs, but Across the Stars, it's just, it's not a fight song. It's literally, it's just, it's a mirror. It's emphasizing what you see. It reflects and it emphasizes what you see, and it reminds you of what came before, what is happening, and what is going to happen. And that is why I think Across the Stars is the best score in the entirety of the prequel trilogy. And it is a strong contender for the best song, best score, oh my God, score, in the Star Wars saga. So when Kanye or anyone else says the prequels are better than all the other movies, including the original trilogy, I can at least agree that the score is the best. And that is, there is much more to be had. You can talk about casting. I mean, Ewan McGregor is amazing. He is, speaking of which, Obi-Wan, the miniseries, coming out soon. It's going to come out next year. Freaking lose your mind. Obi-Wan is back on the set. He was on the Mandalorian set, and they had their Obi-Wan's old robes and attire. I really wonder how it was when the Disney transition came in, when they acquired all the assets and the robes and the old clothing from Lucasfilm. And George Lucas was like, hey, maybe in the future, maybe in about half a decade, we're going to do a Obi-Wan spinoff. Just can we have those robes on standby? Oh my God. It's there, ladies and gentlemen. Even if they don't use it, you can kind of see where they're going. And I'm so excited. So one thing we could talk about, one other thing that would make the prequels great is definitely the casting and the fight scenes and exploration of the Jedi before they went extinct. There's a lot of things, but I think what immediately pops out and is arguably the best thing about those things is the songs and the score. And I have posited before you why I think Across the Stars is the best. And I now leave that to you. Feel free to disagree, feel free to agree, feel free to discuss and distinguish. I absolutely love that about this podcast. I've heard so much from friends and family. It seems like it's going well, and I am very, very honored to continue putting out these episodes and just spreading the love of Star Wars amongst you good fellow friends, Jedi and Mandalorians alike. So with that, I will end this podcast. I am still a ways out from my destination, but this is what has been going on in my mind. And if you have the stomach for it, if you have the attention for it, I would recommend you check the Kanye episode of the Joe Rogan podcast, or at least look up the clips. Don't watch the entire thing because it is super. It's quite a swallow, but just look at the clips where he talks about his love of Star Wars and just think, wow, if there are like billionaires, you know, people with a net worth of billions of dollars who think, you know, they fanboy, fangirl about Star Wars and about its finer aspects and go so far as to distinguish, you know, the prequels for Christ's sake as being better than everything that came before. You know, it's amazing. Star Wars is beautiful, ladies and gentlemen. Star Wars is amazing. Star Wars is an institution. And what helps make it an institution is John Williams, his love for Star Wars, his passion, his creativity, and all of the scores he's contributed to Star Wars and this community. All right. Thank you. Take care. And may the Force be with you always. Stay safe. Bye-bye.